April 15th, tax day. It's kind of looming. And well, alongside the usual tax-related stress, there's this other threat you really need to be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. Cybercriminals are actively exploiting this period. They know lots of us are dealing with sensitive financial info right now.
It's like clockwork, isn't it?
It really is. It's a predictable surge, unfortunately. Tax season consistently becomes a prime opportunity for these social engineering attacks, precisely because people are focused on finances, deadlines. It makes them potentially more vulnerable to scams.
Right, stressed out, maybe rushing a bit.
Exactly. And it highlights a consistent strategy we see from cybercriminals targeting these periods of, heightened stress and information exchange.
Okay, and that's exactly why we're doing this deep dive today. We're looking at a critical alert from SecRight Labs. They've uncovered a pretty significant campaign using social engineering targeting U.S. citizens right now during tax season. So think of this as like your essential guide to understanding these threats and how you can protect yourself without feeling totally overwhelmed.
Good goal.
Our mission is pretty straightforward. We want to pull out the vital info about these attacks, how they actually work, what the warning signs look like, and the actual steps you can take to stay safe.
Yeah, actionable stuff.
Because we're seeing specific types of phishing emails, ones designed to look really like legitimate tax communications.
Yeah.
So knowing what to watch for is, well, crucial.
And what's particularly concerning, I think, is who these attacks often seem to be aimed at.
Oh, yeah. Who specifically?
This campaign, it specifically seems to be targeting individuals who might be newer to the U.S. tax system. Think green card holders, maybe first-time filers, small business owners.
Okay, people who might be less familiar.
Exactly. These groups might be less familiar with the official procedures, the official look of documents, and so they could be potentially more susceptible to these impersonation tactics.
Makes sense. So let's break down how these attacks usually unfold. It often kicks off with a phishing email, right?
Right, that familiar unsolicited message just landing in your inbox.
And it probably looks somewhat official, maybe it has some logos.
And almost always contains an attachment that's designed to appear as, some kind of tax-related document.
And the deception can be pretty involved.
Oh yeah, they put considerable effort into making these files seem legit, like genuine tax forms or something.
They even use these tricky file names.
Yay.
The report actually points out one specific example, 10484259978-2-4.pdf.lnk.
Hey, the double extension trick.
Yeah. So your first thought might be, oh, it's a PDF file. But that tiny .lnk right at the end, that's a huge red flag.
Huge.
While it looks like a shortcut, it's actually, well, it's a doorway to malicious code. Let's maybe dig into that file name example. It really shows how they try to trick you right from the very start.
Yeah, that .lnk extension is such a classic trick. Clicking it doesn't open a document, not really. Instead, it kicks off this hidden sequence of events, all meant to compromise your computer.
Okay, so let's say you do click. You inadvertently click on this seemingly innocent attachment. What's happening in the background? Can you walk us through that step by step?
Sure. So that single click, it initiates a chain reaction. First, embedded PowerShell scripts. These are pretty powerful command line tools. Within Windows, they start to run silently.
Silently. Okay, so you wouldn't necessarily see anything obvious happening.
Not immediately, no. These scripts then connect out to external servers, often called command and control servers, or C2 servers for short, and they start downloading additional harmful files onto your machine.
And these aren't just like random bits of bad software, are they? The SecRight Labs report mentions a couple of specific examples, repf2yas.tst and revlimt.rar. What's their role here?
So think of these as intermediary stages in the attack. The .txt file might contain, say, further instructions or maybe more code, while the .rar file, that's a compressed package like a zip file, likely containing the final, more dangerous pieces of the malware.
Okay, so it's like a multi-stage delivery.
Exactly, like a delivery service with multiple stops, each package gets you closer to the intended malicious payload.
And ultimately, these downloaded files, they lead to the execution of the real threats, right? Files with names like setup.exe and another one called revlinmt.exe.
Precisely. These executable files, the .exe files, that's where the actual malicious software lives. In this case, it's something called Stellarium malware.
Delirium, okay.
And yeah, as the name kind of implies, its main goal is to steal your sensitive information.
Gotcha. Now, to pull all this off without, your computer's defenses going crazy, they use some clever hiding techniques. The report mentions Base64 encoded PowerShell commands. Can you clarify that. What does that actually mean for, you know, the average person?
Okay, so think of Base64 encoding as a basic way to disguise the PowerShell commands. It makes them look like just a jumble of random characters to initial security scans.
So it doesn't look like code.
Exactly. Traditional antivirus often looks for specific patterns, like a known signature of bad code. Base64 is like putting that code in a simple disguise, so the antivirus doesn't immediately recognize the harmful pattern. It's still functional code underneath, but it looks like gibberish on the surface.
So it's kind of like a wolf in sheep's clothing for code.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
And these disguised commands, they then reach out to those command and control servers you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
What's the purpose of that ongoing connection? Why keep talking back to the attackers?
Well, that link to the C2 server is vital for the attackers. It allows them to send further instructions to the infected machine, maybe download even more dangerous software if they need to.
Ah, okay.
And most importantly, it's the channel they use to receive all the data they managed to steal from you. It's their communication line, basically, with your compromised system.
Wow, that paints a pretty disturbing picture. So this Delirium malware, it sounds like a really serious piece of malicious software. Let's really dig into what this specific malware is capable of doing.
Stellarium is definitely a significant threat. It's a type of malware known as an information stealer, built on the .NET framework, sort of a common platform for Windows software.
Okay.
And this particular campaign, the report says, is using version 1.0.35. Its core function is just to secretly gather as much sensitive data from your computer as it possibly can.
And when we say sensitive data, we mean the really valuable stuff, right? The kind that could cause serious harm if it gets into the wrong hands.
Yeah.
What exactly is Delirium targeting?
Precisely. It's after a really wide array of your digital information. This includes things like all the usernames and passwords your web browser saves for websites.
Oh, wow. Autofill stuff.
Yep. Your cryptocurrency wallet details, if you have any. Information from messaging apps like Discord, Telegram, even Steam for gamers.
That's a huge amount of personal data.
Mm.
But it doesn't stop there, does it? The report mentioned it seems to be specifically targeting things like VPN data.
Mm.
NordVPN was mentioned. And FTP credentials, particularly from FileZilla. Why go after those specific things?
Well, VPN data can give attackers insights into your online activities, maybe even allow them to impersonate your connection. And FTP credentials, especially for something like FileZilla, which web developers often use, could grant them access to websites or servers you manage.
Oh, okay. So they could deface a website or worse.
Exactly. Opens up even more opportunities for malicious actions, way beyond just your personal machine.
And it's not just about passively stealing existing data, is it? I saw something about it actively spying, like webcam screenshots and screenshots triggered by explicit content. That sounds deeply invasive.
It is a significant invasion of privacy, absolutely. Huh. These surveillance features allow the attackers to collect even more personal, potentially compromising information, stuff that could maybe be used for blackmail or further exploitation down the line.
Yeah.
And that screenshotting based on explicit content, that's a particularly nasty and disturbing tactic.
Definitely. And beyond just, you know, looking around, the report notes that it performs system reconnaissance.
Mm-hmm.
What does that actually involve? What are they looking for?
So system reconnaissance is basically like a scout gathering intelligence on your machine. Stellarium collects details about your computer's configuration, like what operating system you're running, the software you have installed, any security measures you might have in place.
Why?
This information helps the attackers understand how best to further exploit your specific system, or maybe even move laterally within a network if you're part of one.
And to make sure it sticks around, it creates hidden folders,
right? Okay.
Like in their persilt okilled% directory. That's how it achieves persistence, stays on the system.
Correct. By creating hidden directories and likely setting up ways to automatically run when you start your computer, Stellarium tries to make sure it survives, restarts, and stays active on your system for as long as possible.
Sneaky. And all of this stolen data, it isn't just sent back in plain text, I assume. It's protected with encryption before being transmitted.
Absolutely. The report mentions it uses AES 256 encryption.
Which is strong, right?
Very strong. It's a standard, robust encryption method. They use it to secure the stolen data as it's being sent back to their servers. This makes it significantly harder for, say, network security tools or anyone else to intercept and understand the information while it's in transit.
Okay, so with all these layers, the hiding, the wide range of data targeted, the spying, the persistence, the encryption, it sounds like Stellarium is a real handful.
Yeah.
And the report mentioned these advanced evasion techniques, things like sandbox evasion and mutex-based execution control.
Yeah.
Can you break those down in simple terms?
Sure. So sandbox evasion is basically the malware's ability to detect if it's being analyzed in a controlled testing environment. Security researchers use these sandboxes to study threats without risking real systems.
Right, like a lab.
Exactly. If Stellarium detects it's in a sandbox, it might just not do anything malicious. Or it might behave normally to avoid being analyzed and flagged.
Clever. And the other one, mutex-based execution control.
Okay, think of a mutex as sort of like a digital token. The malware checks if this token already exists on the system when it starts up. If it does, it means another copy of the malware is already running, so this new instance just quits.
Why do that?
It prevents multiple copies of the malware from running at the same time, which could cause conflicts, slow down the system noticeably, or just make it easier for security tools to spot that something weird is happening. It's about staying efficient and stealthy.
Okay, I get it. And all of this combined, as the report highlights, makes Stellarium particularly difficult for just standard, everyday security software to find and remove.
Yeah, that's the worrying part. Traditional methods often aren't enough.
That's a sobering thought. So given all that, what are the actual warning signs we should be looking for? What are these indicators of compromise, the IOCs, that the report points out?
Right. Paying close attention to these IOCs is really vital. The report gives specific file names and, importantly, their unique SHA-256 hashes.
Hashes. Those are like digital fingerprints for files, right?
Exactly. Unique identifiers. So a file on your system has one of these exact fingerprints. It's a very, very strong indication of compromise.
Okay, let's maybe list some of these out clearly just so you, our listener, know exactly what to potentially look for. We have setup.exe or maybe revolone.t.exe.
Yeah, those are the final payload executable.
The digital fingerprints 6AN9889393128 ADCCB9313A26127905D 1470FFF1C4AFU125 4DAN3961SU25C 20CEC, Tordion-CVO, FIDI-ID, Civer84D shortcut file, 104842597824.pdf.lnk.
The entry point.
And is fingerprint 34DO4B26, and the only authority for you, say, CPSs, new 84D, 1D1A279965, 0 palpatron 882584, down number 4 idea 5E82, affixio B says, 1C4CO, BEZBCAPC, 1649 8FE, WEADA, granted the intermediate scripts. The compressed archive, Revelin.ARR's fingerprint is 317050600606067246MUC051A. 3002 MAR278A0DELMA89161780222835A.
Yep.
And even an HTML file, interestingly, 104842599782 VAST34.html with fingerprint FIV3B AMB3FP FC7D29CC73499 70CC0C2933 T34913554 6K4A41C416B82P1. It's quite a list. How can someone actually use these fingerprints, these hashes?
Well, most reputable antivirus software and also many online file scanning services like VirusTotal allow you to actually submit a file's SHA-256 hash. You can check if it's already known to be malicious.
Oh, okay.
So if you suspect a file or if your security software flags something, you can check its hash against this list. If you find a file on your computer with one of these exact fingerprints, yeah, that's a very strong sign your system has been compromised.
Okay, so knowing what to look for is important, but obviously preventing these attacks in the first place is the best bet, right?
Absolutely. Prevention is key.
What are some practical, like, best practices that individuals can actually implement right now to protect themselves from these kinds of threats?
Well, the foundational principles of online safety are always, always critical. Firstly, you've got to exercise extreme caution with unsolicited emails, especially anything concerning taxes. Just don't click on links or open attachments unless you are absolutely certain of the sender's authenticity.
Verify, verify, verify.
Yes. Always independently verify emails claiming to be from the IRS or any tax agency. Don't just hit reply or use the phone number in the email. Go directly to the official IRS website, find their official contact info, and check that way.
That's really crucial advice. What else can people do?
Definitely enable multi-factor authentication, or MFA, on all of your tax filing accounts, your bank accounts, anything sensitive.
That extra code you get on your phone.
Exactly. It adds a vital extra layer of security. Even if someone gets your password, they still need that second factor.
Uh-huh.
Also, keep all your software up to date, your operating system, your website, web browser, and especially your antivirus or endpoint protection. Updates often patch critical security holes.
Don't ignore those update notifications.
Please don't. And finally, make it a regular habit to back up your important documents, tax records, financial statements, photos, whatever is critical. Back it up to an external storage device that isn't constantly connected to your computer.
Like an external hard drive or a USB stick?
Yep. That way, if your system does get compromised, say by ransomware, you won't lose all of your critical data. You have a separate, safe copy.
Those are all really solid, actionable steps. Are there any specific types of security tools that the report maybe suggests people should consider using beyond just basic antivirus?
Yeah, the report does highlight a few types of solutions that can be particularly effective against threats like Stellarium. One is behavior-based antivirus software.
How is that different?
Instead of just looking for known signatures of malware, it looks for suspicious activity on your system. Like, is a program suddenly trying to encrypt files or access your webcam without permission? This makes it better at catching new and evolving malware that hasn't been seen before.
Okay, that sounds useful.
Email filtering services are also great. They can identify and block many phishing emails before they even land in your inbox. Many email providers offer this, but there are dedicated services too. And then, for more advanced users or maybe small businesses listening, security information and event management SIEM platforms can provide much more comprehensive monitoring. They collect logs from all of your network and analyze them for signs of attack. It's a more enterprise-level tool, generally.
Gotcha. Okay, now, the SecRight Labs report also had a helpful FAQ section addressing some common questions people might have. Let's maybe run through a few of those for you, our listener. First one, what exactly is a social engineering attack in this context? We've used the term a lot.
Right. So as the FAQ clarifies, it's basically a tactic that relies on manipulating people, tricking individuals into performing actions they shouldn't, like clicking that malicious link, opening the bad attachment, or maybe revealing confidential information like a password.
And it often involves the attacker pretending to be someone trustworthy, right?
Exactly. Impersonation is key. Pretending to be the IRS, your bank, maybe even a colleague.
Okay. And how does this specific Stellarium malware actually get onto a victim's computer in this campaign? Just to recap.
It's through that multi-stage infection process we talked about. Starts with the phishing email, the malicious attachment disguised as a tax doc.
The data link file, maybe?
Could be. You open that attachment, it triggers those hidden encoded scripts, which then go out and download and install the actual Stellarium malware components.
Okay. We touched on this earlier, but it's an important point, so let's reiterate. Who is particularly vulnerable to these kinds of attacks? Who should be extra careful?
Yeah, the report really emphasizes that individuals who are maybe newer to the U.S. tax system, so first-time taxpayers, green card holders, along with small business owners, seem to be at a higher risk in this specific campaign.
And the thinking is they might be less familiar with how the IRS communicates?
That seems to be the logic, yeah. Less familiarity with the specifics of the U.S. tax system, the official communication channels, may be more likely to be confused by a well-crafted fake email. Makes them potentially more susceptible.
Okay. And a question that I bet many listening are wondering. Can your regular traditional antivirus software reliably detect and stop Stellarium?
Unfortunately, the answer is probably no, or at least not reliably. As we discussed, Stellarium includes several of those anti-analysis features, the sandbox evasion, the mutex.
Right.
These are specifically designed to get past detection by traditional signature-based antivirus programs. That's why the report suggests looking at more advanced behavior-based security solutions.
That's a really critical point to understand.
Yeah.
Don't rely only on basic AV. Now, what if someone listening realizes, oh no, I think I might have actually clicked on one of those suspicious tax emails? What are the immediate steps they should take, like right now?
Okay, first thing, the very first thing. Immediately disconnect your computer from the internet. Pull the network cable, turn off the Wi-Fi, whatever it takes.
Why is that so important?
It can help stop any ongoing communication between your possibly infected machine and the attacker's C2 servers. Hmm. Stops data being sent out, stops more malware being downloaded.
Okay, disconnect. Then what?
Then run a full deep scan using reputable, up-to-date security software. Hopefully something beyond just basic AV if you have it. Let it run completely.
And if it finds something, or even if it doesn't.
Honestly, it's highly advisable to seek help from cybersecurity professionals after something like this. They can thoroughly examine your system, properly clean it if needed, and help you figure out what, if any, data might have been compromised. Better safe than sorry.
Good advice. Finally, a question that's probably on many people's minds. Is it even possible for law enforcement to actually track down and catch these cyber criminals? They seem so slippery.
Well, it's really challenging. While it might be technically possible in some cases, the reality is that these attackers often use encrypted communication. They operate through this complex global network of servers, often in jurisdictions that aren't cooperative.
Makes them hard to pinpoint.
Extremely difficult. It makes it very hard for law enforcement agencies to accurately attribute the attacks, let alone find and apprehend the actual perpetrators.
So it really just underscores the importance of individual vigilance and being proactive, doesn't it? Especially as we get closer to that tax day deadline.
Absolutely. Understanding these threats, like we've talked about, being able to recognize the warning signs, the IOCs, and then consistently applying those best practices, MFA, updates, backups, caution, with emails, that's really your most effective defense in today's digital world.
Yeah. You know, considering the level of sophistication we're seeing just in these tax season attacks, it really makes you think, doesn't it?
It does.
If cyber criminals are investing this much effort and technical skill into exploiting this one particular time of year, what other areas of our digital lives might be just as vulnerable, maybe in ways we haven't even thought about?
That's a great question.
And maybe what proactive measures can we all take to broaden our understanding, to strengthen our overall cybersecurity posture beyond just, you know, protecting ourselves during tax season? Definitely something for you to maybe mull over.